Triple M Rocks Sunday Arvo Footy. Triple M Rocks the Footy. For Harvey Norman Home Appliances.
2017.
It's a try!
Oh! Run hard and tackle hard.
You'll hear more footy than ever before. Across the Triple M Network. For Bryden's lawyers protecting your future. Paul Kent, Gordon Tallis, Ryan Girdler and Anthony Maroon.
It's what rugby league's all about. Go!
Triple M Rocks the Footy.
This is Sunday Triple M NRL.
Yes, hello and welcome to Sunday's Triple M NRL brought to you by Bryden's Lawyers. We are broadcasting live from ANZ Stadium and we'll bring you the 4 o'clock game between the Bulldogs and the Seagulls. Lots to get through before then though, so let's introduce the team. Paul Kent from the Daily Telegraph and Fox League. Hey PK.
Good, you're on fire. Loving it.
And Gordon Tallis.
G'day, Gordon.
Gordon, how are you?
Very good.
Welcome.
Best looking host I've ever had.
And Nathan Highmarsh is filling in for me today, and I'm filling in for Maroon. Welcome, Hindy, Parramatta legend. Great to have you on board.
Thank you, Ryan.
You're very welcome, Nathan. Hey, we got to talk about Maroon. Obviously, I am filling in for Maroon today. It's not an easy task. They're big shoes to fill. But, yeah. Gordon, do you feel any accountability? Maroon's away today.
Yeah. Well, lucky
infection
you didn't say
to the teeth.
Well, lucky he didn't say big teeth to Phil because you got him covered there.
I do have him covered there, but he's not well, so we send our regards out to Maroon today.
Are you trying to make me feel bad?
Well, I'm just saying that you had something to do with the fact that he's not here today.
Because I bagged his teeth, so he went and got brand new teeth.
He did.
But I didn't expect him to go at the back of Lekemba to his cousin just in the garage to get them fixed.
What's wrong with Lekemba?
No, nothing, but that's where his family lives, like he tells me, because when we drive through...
Let's give him some love today, yeah? PK? Well,
so what happened to him?
Mate, the poor bloke is on high-grade antibiotics. He's on morphine. He doesn't know where he's at. Trying to get through this. He's got
that was last week. What is he on this week?
Pus oozing out of his gums.
That was last week when he was on the show. So what is he on this week? That's something different.
Oh, well, look, good. I just feel really sorry for the bloke. You bullied him into getting new teeth. He finally got them. He's on death's door right now as we speak, and you continue to make...
You know what the funny thing is, though, boys? I mean, when anyone says, oh, what's wrong with Maroon, you say, oh, he's got an issue with his teeth, they all say, what was wrong with his teeth? No one even identified the issue before you brought it up about a month ago, Gordon.
Yeah, well, he's got teeth like a piranha. It looks like a chainsaw, really. Like, my third income chainsaws are scared of him.
Just keep kicking him, Gordy.
No.
Yeah, keep
going. But it's not my fault that he doesn't brush them. Just because he's got new teeth, he realised that he didn't have to brush them. It's called Colgate.
You know, you can die from a gum infection. You know that. So it is a serious matter. It's very bad.
How would you know about gum infections?
Google it. Go on, Google it.
Oh, is it from the farm?
It's nice to have a caring contributor today.
Yeah,
anyway, Gordon. But anyway, we always start the show on Sundays with a little segment called What's in the Papers. Today, well, boys, it's all about the recent salary cap developments. The headline is Hitting the Jackpot, written by David Riccio. And PK, it's good to see some progress in this area finally.
Yeah, it looks like it's going to get done, which is nice. The NRL has been, and it's shown in the papers today, very generous in their offer to the players. I'm surprised the players are still resisting a little bit. There's a thought tomorrow when they get together via video link that they won't agree to accept the deal. And Ian Prendergast, the head of the Rugby League Players Association, has spoken about it's more than just money. Well, That might be the case, but I'll tell you, it is about money.
Yeah.
Because it's always about money. In any negotiation like this, it's always about money. And the players have been more than looked after. There's a couple of things. I'm still going through the detail of it, Gers, to be honest. And to be honest, I'm not quite up to speed with what the players' concerns
are. It looks like a good deal for the players.
Yeah.
I
mean, when you're looking at those numbers, some of the changes to the game, obviously 50% pay rise, $3.75 million is going to be handed over to the Women's Rugby League, which I don't think anyone will argue with. 30% of the broadcast, basically money that comes in and any other sort of streamed revenue is going to go back to the players. So I think that's a little bit more than I thought that they were after. They were after 29. And $30 million to injury and hardship funds and retirement funds. And I think there are positives.
Paul, so 10 years ago it was $4 million and now it's $7 million. So it goes to $9.4 million. Well, that's about $100,000 more per player if it's handed out. I think that's a pretty good pay rise.
That's 2.5 times. From 4 to 10, that's... We would all like to see our wages go up 2.5 times.
In the last 10 years.
In that period. And look,
Nathan's has.
Yeah, he's one of the fortunate few. But the thing is, what hasn't been addressed to me so far in this is the most critical issue that's addressing the game, and it's our participation. And I don't see where there's money left for the grassroots. And I know that was a standoff at one point there, because there was money put aside. The NRL, when they first proposed their figures to the Players Association, had money set aside for grassroots development. Now, the players said, quite rightly, well, how are you going to spend that? And this is, the clubs have also been asking this question, how are you going to spend that? And the NRL don't have a plan for it. So the NRL have said, well, no, we don't actually have a plan right now, but we are going to work on a plan, and when we do, we know we'll need money, so this money is there for that. And the Players Association basically tried to bite into that. And what they argued, very much like the cricketers, apparently, I'm told, was that they would actually invest in grassroots development themselves, and
I ask? How?
Well, I don't know how they do it.
Going out there and doing more clinics and doing coaching.
I think that's what it is.
That could be it, yes.
Yeah, yeah, that was one of the conditions, I think, with the agreement, is that the clubs would be, or the players would be more out there and accountable.
Hands on. Yeah.
And put more hands on, yeah.
But and so you see today in the paper that the players can share $1.5 million per year for promoting and marketing the game based on a number of appearances and promotions. So essentially the players are going to get more money by doing that, which I think they should already be doing.
Yeah.
I think they're already well compensated. And I think part of your job, I was at the pub last night having a couple of beers, and some people grabbed me and wanted to talk footy. And part of my job here on radio and on Fox Sports is to help sell what we do. So I don't go back to Fox Sports tomorrow and say, listen, a couple of people grabbed my ear roll on Friday night, Saturday night, wanted to talk footy, so I want more money for it.
That was your ear hole,
Look, you know what I mean? But I think that's part of the job. And I think part of what you saw...
It is part of it.
When you become a full-time NRL player, your job is to sell the game, not just on the field, but off the field as well. I know there are a few players out there who do that and do it well.
Of course there are.
And they don't want compensation for it. They don't want extra money for it. That's just what they do.
It's part of giving back to where you come
exactly
from.
Exactly right, Gordon. Yep. But not just where you come from, but just giving back to people who are less fortunate than yourself for a lot of time. But I know someone like Timmy Manor, who does an outstanding job in the community through the Ronald House and the Children's Hospital at Westmead, he doesn't go looking for extra money to do that. He just does it. But the thing that gets, there's a clause in there that is going to, it's a fund there that helps, it gives money to players if they have a good attitude outside the game.
If
you're a rat bag off the field, and all of a sudden, you're on the sauce every night, and you're doing things you shouldn't do.
Or you got tattoos on your neck.
But no, ignore that. But I don't understand why these players are the ones who are going to, hang on, all of a sudden there's a bit of cash here for me to change my
plans.
Yeah,
I know.
I don't understand that at all.
Part of me realises when I was captain of the Broncos, when they asked me, well, there's a whole new responsibility for me that goes along with it. So I would understand that if Jared Hayne comes, and I'm going to talk about Jared Hayne, but if he's on the money what he is, I think he deserves it, because he's the bloke that gets written about when they win or lose, or he's the guy that, promotes the club. He's the guy that is the face of the Gold Coast Titans. He was the face of the NFL for this whole country.
As part of the investment. It needs to be, especially for those key players, it needs to be.
So, mate, you must realise if you're getting big
money, obligation.
You must realise that if you play any sort of rep football, that you become like a spokesman or a statesman of the game type of thing.
I think one of the positives to come out through the week, though, PK, was the fact that the clubs agreed to the $9.4 million salary cap. Was that a surprise to you?
I knew that was ballpark. I was told, I spoke to a few clubs who thought it was going to get to about 9.5. So 9.4 is about ballpark of where they're arguing. 9.2 was always going to be too low, and 10 obviously far too high. So that was good. That leaves every club in a good financial position. The thing about...
What do you mean when you say good financial position? There's rumours out there that some clubs have spent well over $10 million. How does that leave them in a good financial position?
Because that's only a short-term problem. Because that'll be solved within 6 months. They've got to get back under the cap because they won't be able to compete next year. But the reason it leaves them in good financial position is because the NRL has guaranteed every club that they will fund them $13 million. So for a long, long time, it goes, you only got to go back 10 years. And what happened was there were a lot of teams that who would go out and would spend $15 million on their football department. And then when they brought all the money in, they'd only bring in 13.5.
Yep.
They had to find another $1.5 million somewhere in the hole. So they were always scratching for more sponsors, and they were going to the Leeds clubs. Like last year, Canterbury last year, they spent about $23 million in the football department, and the club made about 17, slightly over 17. So the Leeds club came in and said, well, here's the shortfall.
Yep.
And just did that. So what's happening now? Now, some clubs have got Leeds, like Canterbury. Canterbury spent that money because they knew their Leeds club would support them. Parramatta are a similar club. Their Leeds club supports their sale, their football costs, their operation. Penrith is another. Canberra is another. Then you've got clubs like the Gold Coast, the Warriors, St George Illawarra, who...
Titans.
That's the Gold Coast, yeah.
Thank you.
Good to see you paying attention. What happens is they don't have big lease clubs supporting them. So what happens is they have to run it far more along business terms that you're familiar with, where basically you've got to spend less than what you bring in, and they've been doing that for some time, until this last the 2012 television deal, when that was done for 2012 to 2017, the grant was to the clubs was actually less than the salary cap, so clubs had to find that shortfall in salary cap, then they had to find money on top to run their football club. Over the time of this last deal, they reached what they called parity. The clubs always wanted parity, and then there was slightly more. Now what happens is the salary cap will be at 9.4, and every club will get $13 million off the NRL. So they've got $3.6 million sitting there as a head start to run their business before they begin to factor in.
So that should be all the wages, roughly.
Well, that should be more. Well, what they're going to do is
For coaches, staff, administration.
Yeah, they're also going to bring in a cap on what you can spend on football operation.
Yep. Well, if they can't police the cap on the players, how are they going to police the cap on the computers?
We get all that, Gordon, and that's true. Yeah, and what you'll see is there will be a lot of funding now going into feeder clubs, so clubs that are not associated with, for example. The Roosters have got Wyong, Canberra have got Mounties, Parramatta have got Wentworthville. They will probably get a couple of extra physios now and a couple of extra little things.
They'll work out ways
to do it.
So how does it work with, say, a really good club like Penrith? Now they've got their centre of excellence. So they're millions of dollars ahead, aren't they, of the other clubs?
Oh, Penrith have got a Leagues Club group behind them. They're not just one Leagues Club. They've got a variety. They've got probably 10, 12 Leagues Clubs behind them. They've got that centre of excellence. They are just a first-class operation. Yep. And they spend their money well.
You can still build facilities. So Newcastle, West Leagues come in now and want to buy Newcastle, which it looks like they are going to do, they've proposed that they're going to put a $10 million facility together.
25 now.
Well, they can do that. That doesn't come out of the cap. It's just the annual expense of physios, whether it be assistant coaches, whether it be sprint coaches, and all of that other personnel that then is going to be capped at, I think, around 5.5. Yeah. Is that what they're talking about?
The problem was, Gordon, was this. See, when the NRL would give the clubs money, they would say to the clubs, right, here's your grant for the year.
Yep.
And whenever they gave them an increase... And it's a fundamental problem within the game. Whenever they would give them money, the clubs would say, beautiful, and here's an extra $1 million, for example.
That's great for the
coach. Yeah, the coach, the club wouldn't say, you know what, let's take this $1 million that the NRL's given us and let's put it into sponsorships and memberships and turn this $1 million through the business into $2 million in a few years' time.
Yeah.
They weren't investing in their own business that way. The fundamental problem was that as a program, it was flawed. It couldn't work anywhere else except but then what happened is the NRL was saying, we don't want you to keep putting that money into these guys.
Yep.
Because the clubs, what they were doing, they'll take the money, rather than putting it into sponsorships or memberships or trying to fix that area and make the business more profitable, they were just going and getting three extra physios and trying to see if they can afford a hyperbaric chamber.
Yeah, and so with that 3.6 that's going to go to the clubs now, is there a chance that some clubs will sit on their hands?
Cost you more than $13 million to run a football club. They're still going to go out and find their own money.
So, like, that's the only thing that I'm worried about, because obviously, you teach a man to fish, that old Chinese saying, isn't it?
How does that go?
You know it.
No, I don't. Please explain.
Teach a man to fish and he'll eat for the rest of his life. Give the man a fish and he'll eat for one day or something.
Oh, Gordon, well done.
All right, boys.
So I'm just saying that if you give him the money, there is a chance that some of the lazy clubs won't go out there.
No. They can't afford it. You can't afford to sit there and be lazy. Every club's working as hard as it can. But
spending money doesn't bring success, though.
Well, that's what they found. See, last year...
The Sharkies, I think, when the Sharkies won the comp...
They won it last year.
They were the one of the clubs that spent the least amount of money.
They were 12th in football club spend, the Sharks, last year. When the Cowboys won it, they were 9th in football club spend. And that's what the NRL has found. There's no correlation between how much you spend on your football department to success. But what clubs were doing is the old, let's just look over the back fence. Well, if they've got two physios, we've got to have two. The minute they got three, because they want to get an advantage, we want three physios. Mm. And it spiraled out of control. Since 2012, football club spending has gone up 30% year on year, which is an enormous increase. And the game couldn't continue to go down that route. So if the NRL is going to guarantee a certain amount of money, it's going to say, you know what, but we're not going to allow you just go and buy it on four extra physios and a couple of foam rollers.
Well, policing is going to be the key, boys. We're going to go to a break. So you're listening to Sunday Triple M NRL. Nathan Hindmarsh, Paul Kent, Gordon Tallis. We'll be right back after this.
For Bryden's Lawyers, protecting your future. This is Sunday Triple M NRL.
The time for talk is over.
With Paul Kent, Gordon Tallis, Ryan Girdler and Anthony Maroon.
Oh, the bunker's getting an absolute flogging today.
Triple M rocks the footy.
Yes, welcome back. Sunday Triple M NRL at... where are we? At ANZ Stadium today with the boys Paul Kent, Gordon Tallis and Nathan Hindmarsh. Boys, just a recap of the weekend game so far. 30-8 with the Parramatta Eels over the Gold Coast. South Sydney 36-18 to the Warriors. The Broncos beat the Dragons 24-12. The Knights were beaten by the Storm 44-12. The Roosters 22-18. The West Tigers last night. And the Cowboys, depleted Cowboys 16 against the Sharkies 26. Heine, we'll go to Thursday night's game. Your boys, the Eels, win over the Gold Coast Titans. Going along nicely at the moment, the Eels. Do you think a top four finish is... I think it's realistic.
I think the for and against might hurt them if things don't go their way. I think they're the worst for and against out of that bunch of teams there sitting on those points. But, you know, good bounce back against the Titans. They got beaten by the Knights in that win, in that loss the other week. But, a good win against the Titans. Obviously, the Titans, with all their dramas going on and no Jarryd Hayne, they didn't really offer too much. But I think the Eels are travelling along nicely. If they can play as good as what they did against the Broncos when they came from that 12-0 deficit a few weeks ago, if they can show that in the semi-finals against the teams they play, I think they can go a long way.
Well, they get another realistic chance this week, don't they, against the Broncos, Gordy?
Yeah, they do, and they defended great. So obviously the week before they let in some tries, but to defend the way they did against the Titans, obviously, you know, you thought they were going to have a bit too much class for the Gold Coast Titans, but they defended hard, they worked hard, and a couple of times they were throwing the Titans over the sideline, and you saw the energy and the enthusiasm. Well, if the Parramatta side bring that, because they got the skill now with Moses, like that ball he passed inside for Will Smith to get jiggy with it and a bit of footwork and scored.
Having Semi Radradra starting to find some form again. Yeah. I thought he was really good at the start of the year and then went really quiet. Like, and then he's only just starting to find his flow again. I know he scored a couple of long range tries on the weekend, but I think he's starting to get that confidence that I think the Eels need for him to fire, because
So they got the points in them, I think, Parramatta Eels, and they got a really tough no nonsense forward pack. It's just when they defend good, you know. So obviously, yeah, the Broncos did skip out the 12-0 here, but the way they fought their way back into the game, the kicking game spot on with Moses and Norman, they got attack everywhere, but it's just, you know, getting through their ruck, getting through the middle, you know, control on that, and Parramatta in a shot.
Yeah, well, he's done a good job, hasn't he, Brad Arthur?
Absolutely.
Like, they would, yeah, I think the NRL gave them a few favours last year. That'll get Parra fans out of their tree, but they did, but he still rebuilt that club quicker than what I thought he would. I thought this might be a sort of bottom of the eight type year, maybe ninth, tenth, but then really kick next year.
Yeah.
But just the way they play, they're a good side.
Well, he showed last year, because how many points they get taken off because they didn't want
12,
them to make
12.
But if they got those points, they make the eight with four in, with all that drama with Chockey Watmell. I think there was all that stuff and semis.
They were cheating the salary cap. Let's not leave that out.
We'll ignore that. Just say, well, they lost 12
like 13
points.
Others, like 13 other clubs. But
he has done a good job. BA's, he's a coach I would have liked to have been coached by.
Why is that?
Because you know why? Because he's, from the things I've seen, you know, he's firm but fair. And I know he reminds me a lot of Brian Smith in the way he coaches players as well. You know, it's not just about getting out there, doing your training run. He'll actually explain why we're getting to this point on the field. He'll talk to his halves about, righto guys, we've got to this point of the field. Why are we here? You know, what's next? Well, you know, we're looking to get a front rower to come to the short side, play an inside ball on him, or, you know, because
he's going
to be
late. Doesn't play the
he actually coaches, you know, because there's a lot of coaches out there who'll just leave their players out there to play. They'll give them a game plan, but they won't actually coach.
Possibly Bo Scott could come back into the side in the next couple of weeks, and Pritchard.
He's back, I think, second week at the finals.
What do you do with those two, Hindy?
Yeah, that's a difficult one, because I think the players, the forwards that are playing all right at the moment. Young Daniel Alvaro is turned into a try-scoring machine under the sticks there. Tepoi Marara on the edge. I think the forwards are going well, but having the bit of the mental toughness experience of Bo Scott and Frankie Pritchard, I think it's going to be a difficult one for Brad Arthur to find out where they fit in.
And Gordy, you're obviously connected to the Gold Coast. I mean, you've been to the Leagues Club once, probably in the last couple of years.
No, we don't have a Leagues Club.
What about their performance the other night? Well, was that to be expected, given what they've been through over the last couple of weeks?
Oh, yeah, I think so. I think the Titans, you know, when they had that big M word, you know, mathematically, that you could still make it, and they got outplayed that night. You know, there's something not quite right there, but I thought, you know, I actually thought that they had a go, and they got a bit, like, I don't mind, like, obviously you can't go there winning every game, but I always judge players, and I judge teams that you support on their effort, and I thought the Titans' effort was pretty good for most of their game, but, you know, they just got beaten by class.
Did the Jared Haynes stuff impact their performance?
You can see in the press conference with the way Ryan James and there's Nathan Peach and there's other people talking out, of course it's affecting you. You can't help but that not affect you, you know. And then I only go back to the Broncos and I Dragons, and, you know, we had times like that. Like, I played, I think, in the worst ever Broncos side when we lost, I think, 9 out of 10, and then we become, I think, the best ever Broncos side because we had went on the longest winning streak, the same team in the same season. So, and at times, like, we questioned ourselves and the media were, like, into us, and Wayne's coming, and, you know, Wayne was rattled, and then, you know, and then I was rattled at times. And so I don't know. So obviously this sort of young side, you know, with some guys that didn't have the experience that like we did, you know, I think that it would be, you know, playing with their minds coming in and, you know, playing not knowing whether Jared's going to be there. And
did you put a line through them for the rest of the year?
There's
only a couple of games left. Look,
I think we'll win both.
I'm thinking through the kick, to be honest.
The other game, the early game on Friday night was South Sydney 36, the Warriors 18. Boys, it's hard not to be impressed with this late season form of the Bunnies. 5 players under 21 went out there, and obviously got some talented guys coming into the squad next year, along with Inglis will be back. I mean, is it time for the South Sydney fans to get a bit excited?
Oh, look, I wouldn't get too excited, but I think they're heading in the right direction. It looks like they've had their rock bottom and they're on the bounce back, doesn't it? They're a side that, with the youth, I like the fact that now that they're out of the playoff contention, Michael Maguire's using a lot of young players. He's giving them a bit of a taste of first grade, and they're coming in, they're playing well, and then he's giving someone else a go. And I think that's the way the club's got to go. There's a bit going on at the Rabbitohs. I'm not quite sure what's happening around the club, but I'm hearing a lot of stories about just, you know, that Russell Crowe's heavily involved in trying to turn the club around fairly quickly, and there's names being mentioned about players, and there's a little bit of whispers about the coaching staff might see some changes, but nobody will confirm anything. But I admire what the Rabbitohs are doing. They're not content sitting there coming 12th, 13th, and just trying to be passive about it. They're saying, you know what?
Well, before Russell Crowe did, like, they were a pretty ordinary organisation.
Well, they had no buying power. Gordon.
That's right. And then now they've got that star power. And for the first time ever, after they won the grand final, they were going down, and there was no Tio, and Sam went over to have a sabbatical and rugby union, and, you know, Tom and George didn't find, but they lost some players. And then you see now, for the first time, I think, if you're a South Sydney fan, you're actually watching the rebuild. Like, you're watching these young kids coming in, and I reckon that you are seeing a bit of light. You're like ahead of South Sydney, and if some of those forwards can play the way Sam is playing, like, man, I'd give him 10%.
Well, if South Sydney have got some drama behind the scenes, the Warriors season's been an absolute debacle. Hindy, what have you made of the Warriors this year?
Disappointing. Very, very disappointing.
And what do you think of them last year?
Again, disappointing. You know,
didn't have the same roster last year as they've got this year. I mean, they had
a lot of injuries last year too with their players. But I just think I just don't get it. I don't get the players they've got there, and they're not winning games. Tuivasa-Sheck is trying his backside off. You know, he's going well. But Kieran Foran, who else can I name there? That's, you know, star factor.
Sean Johnson,
Isaac Luke
is dropping again on the weekend.
And the thing is, I think
Jacob Lilleyman.
The thing is, you want to have a successful New Zealand side. You want to be sitting here, if you're in one of the clubs here, sitting here in New South Wales and Queensland, you want to dread going over there. Well, you don't want to, but you know, for the game, they've got to be going well.
They're not going to get better in the future, because I was talking to Connie Hurrell the other day, and I thought, you know, all those guys, because when their 20s were on television, they would have everybody wanting to come on television. But, so all their rugby players that were playing at the schools would come over and ask the Warriors. But Conrad Hurrell, they didn't go and recruit him. He walked over to them and said, can I have a game with your under-20s?
Yeah.
So now they've put the rugby. So now they've put this under-20s rugby schoolboy thing.
Rugby. But yeah. What
schoolboy
about
rugby on TV. Well, now they don't want to come over and play the Warriors. So
Before they had the under-20s competition, Warriors was a scary place to go to. They weren't relying on the under-20s competition to build up their roster and all that type of stuff. They were just hard,
yeah,
running off the backboards. You know, you had players out there like Stacey Jones, all those
other players.
Their
recruitment was tough.
And their giant
The Irons.
Oh, mate. And you'd be getting over there going, what's wrong? God, something. Mm. I'd do a hamstring and warm-up or something.
Just yeah, Joe. Same here. What was his name? Big Joe.
Joe Vungener?
Vungener.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I actually called him Sir. there's not too many people, but... And then when I say it, people go, oh... Who's the hardest team you played against? Every time I played the Warriors, for some reason, I had to check my body in that much, because as a forward in my position, you always had to put it on the line, and they were just so big and physical. And I reckon, like, they used to bash Webby and myself. They'd come out and it'd be so hard.
What are you talking about? I used to bash both of you blokes.
Oh, we used to run at you.
I know you did.
Nathan, I'm asking Paul Penn.
He was
Eddie,
a spot player.
About the Warriors?
Let me ask you this: a couple of weeks back, Steve Kearney came out after it became clear that they weren't going to make the playoffs and said, any guy that doesn't continue to show some effort, I'm going to walk to the gate. You reckon it's about time he started walking a few? Because I tell you what,
I should have torn a hamstring by now.
I don't think
he's tired.
What we saw against the Rabbitohs on Friday night was satisfactory. I think there were guys...
Some of their defensive lapses or missed tackles were...
They had a lion's share of the football first half of that game, and they allowed tries. South Sydney forward to walk through the
middle. This is the issue, though. The coach comes out and says, anyone doesn't have a crack, I'm going to walk you to the gate.
Hang
on a second, let me finish, please.
It would be like when you take your primary school teachers.
Right, okay.
You'd be leading the whole class out there, Paul.
And we have another...
How many of them are having a go?
And we have another metaphor from Gordon, thank you. Let me finish my point.
They could play for the Wallabies.
Because he couldn't do it, because none of them had a go, and you'd walk the whole team out there.
Well, do that. Make the point. But don't threaten to do it. And then not deliver. That, because you know why? Your words become empty after that.
How many players would you say
I'm
going to
chin you one day, and that I will deliver on that.
You?
Yes.
Get a ladder.
Can I be there? All right? Can I be there?
Get a ladder and get in the queue.
Just tell me when you're going to do it.
I'll give you 15 schooners into it.
No, yeah, Paul.
Put the slippery monkey down.
Hey, Paul, but seriously, if they did do that, who are they going to replace him
with? That might be the case.
Well, you can't say it if you don't have anyone to replace him with.
Exactly, you don't say it.
You don't make the threat in the
first place. Or you pick the worst bloke, or you pick the biggest name. And you say to Isaac Luke...
But didn't he put him on the bench?
I don't care. You say to Isaac Luke, you say to Kieran Foran, you say to those, mate, you know what? You blokes aren't having a crack. So you know what? You're gone. You're getting the big bucks. You should be leading this team. You're not here. Get out of here. That's what I do.
Get rid of Kieran right now. Say, see you, mate.
He's got two games left. What's it going to matter?
I think he walked off the hamstring injury anyway on the weekend.
He's got a back
problem. Yeah, he did. He was injured on the weekend. And look, he was busted, okay? He's got an excuse there. But there are guys there who are just not having a crack. You don't threaten to get rid of them if you're not going to follow through. And second, it creates a bad culture. It creates, well, you know what? We don't need to be afraid of this coach because he's not going to carry through his threat.
The other game on Friday night, boys, the Broncos 24, the Dragons 12. Well, the Broncos looking pretty good at the moment. Gordy, do you think go all the way?
Dare I say it, I think they're building nicely.
Think they can go all the way?
Yeah, absolutely. The last time they did was here in 2006, and Sean Berrigan was a utility centre, half, and they threw him in the halfback. I mean, threw him into the hooker role, and it's just something different. It's a point attack that people haven't defended. I think with Ben Hunt in there, he made a decision out of dummy half. He kicked, and it was a halfback's play from the number 9 position, and he's smart, and it's going to be hard to defend. You've got Semi Thaide there. The first 20 minutes, they just go. A big power game going forward. Semi comes out. He's quite crafty with the football, and then in the 20-minute mark, they bring on a guy, and we all played against Craig Wing, and it was alarm bells. As soon as Wing, you'd come on, and any time you'd go, Oh, my God, because he would test you, and he'd test you whether you're at A or B or C, and then he'd come out, and no matter what happened, even if he didn't break the line, there'd be a quick play of the ball, and he'd change the momentum of the game. And I think Ben Hunt can do that for the rest of the season. And Brisbane, they got the skill. Like, they got Milford, they got, you know, Darius Boyd, Moga's starting to find some form. They've got James Roberts, they've got Oates, they've got Kahu, and they've got, you know, three or four internationals in the pack. Tell me they can't win the comp.
Well, they were too good for the Dragons, and Hindy, after the Dragons started the season, are you surprised at how they've sort of faded out in the back end?
Yeah, a little bit, mate, considering how they started. I thought they showed glimpses of what they had at the start of the season on the weekend, you know, against the Broncos. I thought their big men charges up well. I thought Vaughan was outstanding again, scored a nice try. But I thought the weekend's game against the Broncos, they showed glimpses of what they were doing at the start of the year with their ball playing, but their big men just powering through, little inside balls, all that type of stuff.
What happened?
Well, it was a courageous performance the other night. There was a few that were sick, and, you know, some had to fly in and fly out, and Dugan had to flew. There's five or six.
They would have won a lot more games in the back end of the season had they performed like that week in, week out, than what they did.
There was two tries off kicks, and I know they're worth the same amount of points. Dugan drops the ball over the line, but there's a 12-point swing if you can defend the kick properly. So they weren't too far out of it, the Dragons, and it was one of their better performances. But I think that they were winning with a big power game going straight through the middle. Everybody jammed their defence in, and then they got back to the old ways trying to pass it around, where you've got to have that mix. You've still got to earn the right. But the Dragons, they're going to find it hard, I think.
Yeah, I don't know what they're going to do, the Dragons. So I think they've basically sucked the lemon dry. I don't think they could make the playoffs. I think they went out, they gave their best, but they're just, I don't know if it's injuries, you know what I mean? They're just not there where they were. They were rolling forward through the middle so well at the beginning of the season. They just can't quite get that energy back. And I actually like Kurt Mann at halfback. Yeah. I think given time at halfback, he's a pretty good player. And in fact, you know, it's something Paul McGregor's got to think about. With the form of Ben Hunt at dummy half,
absolutely,
and what Kurt Mann's capable of doing at hooker, at halfback, whether that's going to be their combination next year.
Did it look like Munster? You know, like then his performance was a bit.
Kurt Mann's a natural halfback.
Yeah,
his best position's halfback. And
yep.
He's one of those guys who's paid the price of being so versatile that, you know, you see those guys that they're so good at.
He never finds a position.
Find their position.
He'll need to be good next week against the Panthers in a do or die game. But we've got Sharks legend Paul Gallant on the phone. Gal, a great win last night, 26-16 against the Cowboys. Great first half, mate. What'd you make of the performance?
Yeah, that was it, mate. The first half was pretty good. The second half, you know, the Cowboys tried their guts out, didn't go away, and managed to get a couple of late tries, which was probably disappointing on our behalf. But you know, it's always hard to win up here. So we come up here and got the win, so it's a step in the right direction for where we need to be in a few weeks.
Gal, talk the fans through is how hard is it to go back to back, and there's a reason why our side hasn't gone back to back since 1992-93. What sort of been difference? Some of the differences this year.
I just think every side gets up for, you know, every side wants to be the premier. So there's no, you know, there's no easy game. Every game's a tough game for the whole 80 minutes. And, you know, last year we probably, you know, had a relatively good year as far as injuries go. This year we've run into a few injuries, but we seem to be getting players back now. Got Jaden Bradley back last night. It was really good. Jack Bird, he'll definitely be back for the semis, maybe the last round. So, couple of the problems there along the way, but you know what, we're still in the top four, which is where we want to be, and things haven't been going too bad.
Gal, how do you keep the young guys focused? I know that when we went through it, we had a really young group in 2003. We won the premiership, and in 2004, the old guys kind of understand how difficult it is to play in a grand final, let alone win one. But some of the young guys, I just don't think, because it comes so early, so easy to them early in their careers, they just don't understand it. And I think the year after, they can relax a little bit.
Yeah, look, without a doubt, and look, I know how hard it was to win one. It took me the majority of my career. So it's something that we have addressed as a playing group, and the senior players have been really good right throughout the year, particularly the last couple of weeks. Yeah, we've really ramped up our team meetings and our focus just as a playing group, you know, not involving the coaches, but just telling each other what we expect from each other and where we're at the moment. And guys like Lou Lewis, myself, Wade Grant, the senior boys have been you know, really good in organising their meetings and telling the young fellas just how hard it is, and, you know, don't take it for granted. You know, you get these windows of opportunity and you've got to make the most of them. And, you know, we're in a pretty good space at the moment as far as having a good roster. So we just got to make the most of this opportunity.
Last year you went through a similar patch before the playoffs, Gal, where your form went. We all heard later that was because it was the workload you're doing during the week to try and get, you know, basically top up your fitness in preparation for the finals. Is that what's happened this year, or can you take us through the slight, you know, the differences between this season and last season?
Yeah, look, last year we'd obviously probably a few more wins up on where we are at the moment. I think we probably had 16 or 17 wins possibly this time last year. But that is the case this year as well. They, you know, they've got a program they stick by, the head of performance coach, so they know what they're doing. And the last two or three weeks have been high volume weeks as far as, you know, on the field. We have been running more Ks than normal, and our weights have been you know, extremely heavy in what we've been doing. But they do freshen us up for the game. You know, there's no excuse once you get on the field as far as performance goes. But we are in a similar period to what we were last year, and this week we'll probably start to lighten off a bit and then obviously freshen up for the semis.
Last year was a very successful season, obviously with the premiership, but besides that, you had that great winning streak through the season. That hasn't been there this year, but if you're sitting down now and you're talking about this season as compared to last season, how are you placed? Like, are you happy with where you're at when you see what was required last year to win the premiership, or do you think there's a couple of areas you guys have got to say, listen, fellas, we really need to tighten up around here?
Yeah, there's a couple of areas. I think we've probably let ourselves down the past couple of weeks. We were the best defensive side in the competition up until 2 weeks ago, and had 30 odd points put on us 2 weeks in a row, and that was really disappointing. So, and 16 points last night, you know, with two tries in the last 8 minutes, I think wasn't ideal. So, I think, you know, defence wins competitions, and we need to get back to that aggressive defence and aggressive mindset in defence. And I thought it started last night, and you know, we didn't want to turn it all around last night and, you know, be playing our best footy, you know, three or four weeks out from the semi. So, as I said, I think we've taken a step in the right direction. We know what needs to be done. We've been there before and done it. So, hopefully, it's going to be a really tough game next week against the Roosters. It's sort of a must-win game for both sides to try and cement their spot in the top four. So that'll really test us out, and hopefully we can improve again.
Yeah, absolutely, Gal. Well, thanks for joining us on Sunday Triple M NRL. We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back. Thanks to Bryden's Lawyers.
Never miss a minute of the footy. Download the Triple M NRL app and listen anywhere. The Bryden's Lawyers, protecting your future. This is Sunday Triple M NRL.
Put your clothes on, Gerds. It's not over yet.
With Paul Kent, Gordon Tallis, Ryan Girdler and Anthony Maroon. Triple M rocks the footy.
Yeah, Sunday Triple M NRL out here at ANZ Stadium for the big game this afternoon between the Bulldogs and the Seagulls boys. We were just doing a scoreboard wrap-up thanks to Tyre Power. I think we got up to the Melbourne Storm game yesterday. So the Storm wrapped up the minor premiership. We're going to have Craig Bellamy on the line after 1:30. What did you make of their performance, Gordy, against the Knights yesterday? 44-12 was the score.
Yeah, well, it was... I thought it was brilliant, actually. The Melbourne Storm, they looked a bit tired. The Knights have coming off three straight wins, and the best thing for them is Brodie Croft. Well, that's the only word I can say. So life without Cooper Cronk, and you watch the way he managed it. I think he scored three tries
yesterday.
And the best thing I saw, he scored a try, Heine, and then you'd like it. He didn't look at himself on the big screen.
I do like that. You know, I'm starting to get a bit jack of players looking at themselves on the big screen. When there's a scrum or they score a try and they fix their hair and...
You know what I saw?
Halfway.
We called the game on the 6 o'clock game on Friday night, and I was watching the warm-up. The amount of players looking at the big screen were out here in the warm-up when they were on screen, could not take their eyes off themselves, Gordon.
Actually?
I didn't like it.
No, I don't like it either.
I don't like it either. No.
In the warm-up.
Crichton got caught on the weekend, actually. He made a break. Mm. And he had a quick check of the big screen and he got pulled out from
Luke Lewis, did he start that, Louis? I mean, he's not a vain guy.
It's been around for a while.
Nathan Merritt looked at himself on a big screen here one day against the Roosters, and Nate Miles chased him, and he sort of looked at it, and he looked up, and the ball fell out.
But it's the hair as well. As soon as someone gets tackled now, that's quick fix the hair. And
I played. No, it's no, just a bad habit, isn't it?
Look, players don't have messed up hair anymore. Why is that? You watch
because they put
Moses.
Gel on.
Mitch Moses' hair's same as when he finishes the game.
Yeah, so was Eric Grath Jr.'s actually, but that could be because he didn't do anything on the field. He's just working.
Chad Townsend.
Yeah. He just ran up and down the sideline.
Chad Townsend looks like, like who's warmer. That singer?
Yeah.
No.
You're telling the story.
Yeah. Vanilla
baby,
Ice?
No, baby did a bad, bad thing. What's his name? Chris Isaac.
Hey, what about the Storm head. Going into the finals though, guys? I mean, seriously, is there anyone that's out there that can challenge them?
Yeah, I think Roosters and Brisbane are the two obvious ones that can come up and get them, and obviously there's some other sides that are jostling, but they'd be the two main ones. And I think that Melbourne Storm, that when they come up against Brisbane, and Brisbane at their best, blokes like Sam Thaid, and they're not overawed playing against their old teammates. And I think the Roosters, what they showed last week, you know, when they were ahead, and then the Melbourne Storm score with 3 or 4 minutes to go to ice that game, I think that the Roosters would be quietly confident as well. I think that there's three heavyweights that are going to have a crack at the moment, but there's still plenty of
water. Your heavyweights are the Roosters,
Brisbane and Melbourne.
See, I've got Roosters, Melbourne and Cronulla. I didn't put Brisbane in mind, but I'm starting to waver a bit.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, though. Melbourne are playing so good and are so consistent with their effort that the way I see it is any team that beats them in the finals, a couple of teams are capable of getting them in the playoffs, right? But I think whoever beats them won't win it. There you go.
It'll take that much out of them that week?
I think they'll have to get up so high to beat Melbourne that I think they might come down the following week and not quite be there. So they'll obviously, what I'm saying is they'll do the other teams a favour by eliminating Melbourne, and then the other teams will win the comp.
And I'm not saying this because Heine's here, but remember when Parramatta, like they had that great year. Melbourne Storm have been up all the time. They play a semi-final style of game. Is there a chance that when they get there?
No.
They're too
that
experienced.
Does happen. Saint Manly were like that in the 90s. Manly made grand final 94, 95, 96. 95, 90, what was it? 95, 96, 97?
Yes.
Manly. And only won one of them.
That was 97.
But the Warriors just 96. No. They only won
Storm,
96. They were up all year. It's very difficult sometimes. So you look at the Wayne Bennett Coast sides. They generally get momentum come finals time. They hover there or thereabouts, but they get better as they get closer to the finals. We saw that last year with Cronulla. Some teams do get up and can struggle to kick again once they get to finals. Manly, I think, were a side that were a bit like that, as I said, in the 90s. But not Melbourne. Melbourne have an ability, because I think Cameron Smith is a genius.
Yeah.
He has an ability to just pick them up, that extra little amount that's needed.
He made a mistake yesterday.
He threw a pass on the ground.
Yeah.
You see that?
And then he put a kick in when he should have passed. He made two.
Yeah, and he went for a 40-20 and didn't execute it. Is that an error?
But you know what?
Yeah.
It is for him.
It won't happen again.
No, but they were really good yesterday. I think the fact that this year we spoke to Billy Slater, I think we got some...
audio.
Got some audio of that as well, have we there somewhere, Alex? But yeah, we spoke to him yesterday about, you know, is this the best side that they've had since 2007? It's been 10 years, obviously, since they had that premiership taken away from them. And what was the difference between, you know, the side back
and
the side now? But he reckons that was the best side in which they're fielded. And when you go through that side in 2007, it was pretty impressive.
Well, they were cheating the cap.
Yeah, well, that's why it was so impressive.
Yeah, like, seriously. Like, you've got to put an asterisk next to it. It's one thing to say that's the best side I ever played in, but they got the premiership stripped from cheating the salary cap.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
Yeah. And in 2009.
And into
the hurt. It's been here at the moment, just looking out there.
What do you think about the Warriors?
No, I think the Warriors are great. Yeah, I don't know why I was singing Warriors.
About the Newcastle Knights, though, Honey? Obviously, yesterday took a couple of big hits early. They lost Matautia early. They also lost Brock Lamb, who's in great form at the moment. They started really well. They scored first, but
gave them a chance yesterday to beat the Storm. But you know, I've got a soft spot for the Knights this year, just the style of footy they play. They're a bunch of, you know, blokes who probably don't have the big superstars in their side, but they're willing to turn out each week for each other. Absolutely. And play their guts out for each other. And they get in the sheds at full time and they go, you know what? Everyone's buggered. They've had a go. They've had a dig. And they've played hard for each other.
Did you get a text off our boss yesterday?
No.
You didn't get a text from Maddie?
Oh, God. I was thinking wrong. Other boss. I was thinking of the different boss. I did.
Maddie. As soon as the Knights scored, get it up. Yeah.
Get it up.
There was one bloke that thought that the Knights were going to win.
They started well. Yeah. They did start really well. I think they had a ball up there for Hughes, the Mark Hughes Foundation yesterday.
Yeah. Had a ball and to raise money and obviously to do that, you know, that walk. Where are they going? Everest. That's going to be great. Yeah. And Hughes is just one of those great guys. And, you know, the Knights, I actually got a lot of respect for the Knights, the way they've tried this year, those young guys, and I always thought that if you keep on going to the well and you're not getting any water, but then they won those three in a row, so now the young kids are going to be better for it again.
What have you made of the Saifidi brothers, Daniel especially? He's come on. I mean, he took on last week, I mean, obviously the win against Parramatta. Yep. He basically, I'm not saying he single-handedly took on the pack, but yesterday you had Bromwich, you had Solomon Asofa.
What's that? You want to go lay on the sofa?
I'd love to.
Nelson?
I'd love to. Nelson.
Nelson.
What's his name?
Yusofa Solomona.
That's it. That's it. They had him. So he took on some some pretty
Mate, I'm super
pages,
impressed. Mate, I'm super impressed with the way they've had it go. And I don't know, Kenty might know, but to me, front row was, I reckon, 25, 26, 27, probably 27 to 30s, I reckon that's when they hit their peak. Like the big front rowers,
yeah,
you know, like, mate, like they get the toughness, you know, later on in their career, and then they start getting old and they know how to use their body a bit more. These guys are young, cutting their mustard against, you know, some of the best players in the game today, and they're holding their own.
No, they're going really well. I think they're a side that, look, Nathan Brown's putting good foundations in place for their future. That's the big thing. Like they're not capable of making the semis at the moment. They just can't. They're just not that good. But what he's doing is he's teaching them the right values to keep precious.
Yep. Well, he's doing a great job up there, Nathan. And look, we're going to take a break, guys. And you're listening to Sunday Triple M NRL. Thanks to Brian's Lawyers, protecting your future. We're going to be right back. The Raging Bulls are going to be coming up soon. We've got Craig Bellamy on the line. And don't forget, we're going to be calling this big game out here at ANZ Stadium between Manly and the Bulldogs. We'll be back soon.
Triple M rocks. Sunday Arvo footy for Brighton's Lawyers. Protecting your future.